Afternoon, everyone. It is 12 p.m. and I'm going to call this meeting to order. And we'll start with roll call with Yvonne.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. All righty. So we're going to start with Brian Arnold.
I am here.
Mel Bonta. Adam Blakesley. Ricky Boche. Michael Boggs. Frank Cantone.
Present.
Sean Chang.
Present.
Carl Cornell. Erica Crawley.
Present.
Bethany Dixon. JB Doss.
Present.
Thomas Hembury. Don Henshaw. Kyle Carnuda.
Here.
Ellie Crump Powers.
I'm here.
Jeremy Cruiser. Sophie Lanches. Yalberton Lucane. David McDermott. Pia Mengers. Ann Morse.
Present.
Kevin Phipps.
Here.
Stephanie Rasu. Kate Supron.
I'm here.
Deborah Serene.
Here.
Wendy Treat. Oh, she's not here. Jana Van Houten.
Here.
And Danielle.
Here.
Thank you. That is everyone. I will take a look at the screen also. I know that I saw a lot of different people joining in. And so I'll make sure to, update the attendance. Thank you all.
All right, thank you, Yvonne. And now we'll move on to our land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gayakono tribe, the dispossession, and honor the ongoing connection of the Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. All right, so we will move on to the approval of the September 18th, 2024 minutes. It's located in the agenda that was sent to you all today. So if you could take a couple of minutes to look that over, and then I will accept motions to approve.
Hi, Erica.
Yes.
This is Eric. May I just ask, can we possibly table those until next meeting? I did not have a chance to fill in some sections over last week due to our work with the election. So I'd just ask everyone's approval to get a chance for me to complete those and submit them next meeting.
Do we have a motion to table the minutes to next meeting?
Motion to table.
I'll second.
Thank you. Is that by unanimous consent? Awesome. All right, great. So we'll table those minutes to our next meetings to give the Office of Assemblies the opportunity to finish completing those minutes for our review. Awesome. Are there any calls for late additions to the agenda?
If we have time, only if we have time, would it be possible to just circle back on the free menstrual products conversation that we had? I think it was two meetings ago.
Awesome. We can actually put that into our open discussion piece, Kyle. So if we have time and
perfect
open discussion, we can do that at free menstrual products. And I'll also add the First Gen conference to that as well, just to give folks some context about what I sent out earlier today. Are there any other late additions to the agenda? Awesome. So we'll move on to the business of the day. So there was some attendance reminders that we wanted to put out. Carl, did you want to speak to that?
Yeah, hold on, let me just make sure my microphone's the right place. Perfect. Just wanted to make sure that everyone is reminded that you are allowed up to two unexcused absences a semester, and that it's really easy to get an excused absence. Before the meeting starts, just send us an email and let us know that you can't make it. We're not going to grill you on why you can't make it. It's nice if you let us know why, but it's not necessary. Just let us know beforehand. It does come with severe consequences if we do start noticing patterns of people missing the meetings very regularly without getting an excused absence. So again, you can email Yvonne directly and just let us know if something comes up, okay?
Thanks, Carl. And the First Gen conference, I think we'll just talk about that during open discussion so that we can get through the things that we need to get through today. The in-person Cornell co-worker coffee that's sponsored by us, right? So this is an initiative that the EA has been working on for some years. In my conversation with Cassie from HR, and so we're now able to actually move forward with it this year. So the first in-person coworker coffee that we're offering for folks as an opportunity to connect with each other, but also with us as EA, so we can let them know what we do for them and how we support them, will be October 30th at the College of the Veterinary Medicine. And so that'll be held there. We're going to do four this year. So there'll be one held at CVM, there'll be one held at Duffield for folks who are closer to Central Campus. There'll also be one hosted in RBG at Novix Cafe for folks who are on North Campus. And then we'll host another one at Martha's Cafe in Martha Van Rensselaer, so we can get some folks who are Central, North, and closer to the vet school as well. So just wanted to update everyone on that. We are looking for folks to help us manage the table, right? We want to make sure that we're all participating in some kind of way. If you aren't able to manage the table with us, we would hope that you would show up, right? It could be for 15 minutes, it could be for 30 minutes, it can be for the full length of time. The times vary from 1.5 hours to 2 hours, depending on the location and how we needed to book it. And we're looking for a couple folks to help us out with that table. The table would be in shifts. It wouldn't be for the full duration of the event, but it's just so it doesn't fall as heavily on the executive committee and that we have some support from EA members. So if you are interested in helping us manage the table, can you please reach out to either one of us, right? It could be myself, it could be Yvonne, it could be Carl, Wendy, or Don. Just to let us know that you're interested so we can put you on the list of folks who would be interested in manning that table. All right, awesome. I know that they're moving on to the unknown positions for a few members, the committees, right? So this is really in reference to, oh, I'm so sorry. I see hands. No worries. Anne, you're recognized.
Thanks so much. I'll reach out to you about the October 30th. I was wondering about the virtual option for our distance employees. And if we could, I mean, I'd even be willing to come with my laptop and sit there and have virtual and in-person time. So
Awesome. Yeah. So with Coworker Coffee, Coworker Coffee is initially virtual. That's how HR offers it. It's a virtual meetup for folks. So we didn't offer a virtual option because that already exists. But if there are any thoughts, we are here to hear them and welcome those and see how we can incorporate those into what we're doing. Absolutely. Kyle?
Well, I had the same question, but I had never heard of this initiative before, and I am a remote employee. So if this is something that's going to be advertised as an EA initiative, I just wanted to throw it out there that I can definitely support as a remote employee to be online with other remote employees if it's something that's advertised together or is a separate initiative. But yeah, I would say I'm more engaged than the average remote employee, and I had no idea that was even a program. So if there's going to be a marketing bump around this, it could be a way to get remote employees engaged.
Awesome. We can figure out how to set that up then, so that they could happen around the same time that the in-person ones are happening. Any more thoughts about Coworker Coffee? No? Awesome. Great. So moving on to unknown positions for a few members of the committee chair. So I do believe this item on the agenda is referring to staffing the committees, right? Some of them are understaffed, and we all need to be we all need to be participating in at least one committee. So for those who are not attached to a committee yet, can you please reach out to Wendy about participation? Oh, sorry, Yvonne, go ahead.
No, no, you're so good. Sorry. Thank you. So actually, a quick update. I spoke with Wendy, and she shared that she was going to share a document with everyone who is chairing a committee to ensure that everyone's aware who is in that committee. And also, some of the committees are a little bit larger than others, which means that there's a specific number of voting members. And then I guess, additional members of that committee. So that will also help us identify who are the voting members per the chair's decision with, you know, within discussion with that specific committee. And the last thing is that, yes, Wendy will be sending out more communication about open positions and doing her best to ensure that those positions are filled. Thank you.
Thanks, Yvonne. Appreciate that update. Does anybody have questions with regard to committee participation? No? Awesome. And so moving on to the Cornell UAW negotiations statement that we were talking about during our first meeting of the year. So we wanted to just follow up and see if Employee Welfare Committee could come back to us about their suggestions, since we talked about this falling in their wheelhouse as well, outside of just the executive committee, right? Seeing if you all could come back to us at our October 16th meeting about any suggestions that you have, whether or not you think the statement is necessary now that we are pretty, I don't want to say far removed from it, but if this is still impactful for our employees at this time, right? Would it make sense for the EA to make a statement? And if so, what your suggestions for that statement would be? So that way we could craft together that that statement. So I'm not sure, is Kristen here?
Chris is excused today. She's attending a training. I'm in the committee though, and I can say that I can communicate with Chrissy and make sure that we make this to the agenda. I think the October 16 might be a little bit difficult as we do already have some agenda items for that meeting, but I'll do my best to at least have that conversation and initiate it, and hopefully we can come back with an update for October 16.
Awesome. Thanks, Yvonne. Appreciate it. All right. So on to our committee reports. Executive Committee is first up. Yvonne, I'm not sure if you have anything.
I mean, really, I think it was in the agenda item, right? Like, we want to push those coffee with colleagues across campus. So we'll release those dates. Erica just did, and we'll make sure that you have access to those dates. And yeah, connect with us if you want to participate. It'll be an important opportunity to engage others, for you to connect with others, and also for them to learn a little bit more about the employee assembly and the impacts that it may have in their positions, right? In terms of advocacy, whether it is for policy, benefits, something that is going well even, so we can replicate it in other areas. So if you have the opportunity, please, please, please join us so you can interact and engage with other individuals during that coworker coffee opportunity.
Thank you, Yvonne. And Don is not here, am I correct? Yes, Dave?
Yeah, hi. I was just gonna say that I had the opportunity to be at the tabling event at the Arts and Sciences staff fair, and that was really good. And I asked Eric if he could provide more like leaflets and handouts to give people. So like for this first gen conference meeting, it might be good to know that we have that in hand prior to doing that event. Just a thought. Thanks.
Am I correct in that Don is not here?
Yes, that's correct.
Awesome. So we'll move on to the Employee Education and Development Committee. Does the chair for this committee have anything to report out to us?
Hi, everyone. Only an update that I have for you is that we are working to narrow down a date to have our first committee meeting with me as chair, and we're hoping to have that before the next meeting on the 16th. And that is all I have for now. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Deb.
You're welcome.
Employee Welfare Committee.
Io, would you like to share a few updates? Christy's not here today. It's okay if not, I'm happy to share.
Well, I could just talk about what we talked about today, maybe. So we had, it's Michelle. Oh no, what was her last name?
Artabee.
Thank you, Artabee. Came and spoke with us about childcare. So she had two updates. The first was that it's Domestic Violence Awareness Day on October 17th, I believe, and her office is doing quite a bit of work to raise awareness around that issue. So if you're interested in learning more, I guess we can just drop her name in the chat and then folks can reach out to her. But it is great that Cornell's getting behind driving awareness around that issue. I think they did a little bit of math just to figure out like how many Cornell employees might actually be impacted personally and immediately by domestic violence. And it was about 2,000 Cornell staff, which is a pretty significant number.
Maybe I froze. Sorry. Never mind.
Hello.
Hello.
But the main topic was around childcare and what the university, I guess the strategy the university is taking to alleviate some of the childcare burdens that staff are facing. So she discussed a community initiative in which Cornell's donating over $1 million over the span of 5 years to increase the number of slots that are available in Tompkins County, but those spots will be available to anyone, not just Cornell employees. The idea being that if you're alleviating the burden on the community at large, that Cornell employees will benefit as well. But she was very clear that in no way will that fully address the need. She anticipates that the burden and the need for Cornell employees is about 1,000 spots. And if they meet their goals for this community initiative, that opens about 500 spots max over the course of those 5 years. So there is more work that potentially needs to be done. And the idea of expanding or creating a new childcare center on campus or immediately off campus is on the table, but it didn't seem like there were any concrete immediate plans to pursue that option. So just know that the Welfare Committee is taking the childcare burden issue very seriously. And I'm sure this wasn't the first time that we've had her speak with us in the last year. And I'm sure it won't be the last time. But if you do have any specific questions about the childcare issue as far as welfare goes, then please reach out to us, anyone on the welfare committee, or maybe put questions in the chat. I don't think it needs to be on the record necessarily. And that's something that we can pursue. Did I do a good job? Thanks, Yvonne.
Awesome. Thank you, Kyle. And the Benefits and Policy Committee?
Hello, it's Bethany. And I was not at our first Benefits and Policy Committee because I was facilitating Turning Point, but I heard that it was a great meeting. And we have our first sort of official meeting tomorrow at 2 p.m. So if anyone is curious to attend, feel free to send me an email. I can share the Zoom link or add you to the ongoing calendar invite. Equally, if anyone would like to be removed from the ongoing calendar invite, don't hesitate to let me know that as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Bethany. And Elections Committee, do we have a chair for that? I don't think so. Okay. All right. Awesome. So on to our open discussion topic. So we'll move to what Kyle brought up earlier, which was the free menstrual products in the bathrooms. Kyle, did you want to elaborate on why you want to bring that back to us?
Yeah, I was just looking back at the meeting minutes. This could be a Kyle issue, in which case someone let me know. I just had a lot going on in the last like month, but the meeting minutes indicated that we discussed action items, but they didn't actually outline what the action items were. So I just couldn't remember what we had talked about as far as what the next steps were, who was accountable to those next steps.
Carl?
Yeah, I believe, and I may be recounting incorrectly, but I believe that we discussed that we would bring this to the UA and have the UA kind of talk about it on a larger platform than our just staff only platform, because it does have impacts well beyond our committee.
When is that? Did that already happen?
So the last UA meeting was yesterday. I was unable to attend that meeting because I was not in town. But yes, the next UA meeting I can check is, I do believe, next week.
Oh, okay, that's good. And I feel like, I think if I can recall correctly, the two main issues were like, one, there's just a question about like, where are menstrual products currently available? Who's funding them? Where are there gaps and opportunities? But then the second piece being like, with this legislation passed, what is the responsibility for Cornell and who at Cornell to solve for that gap? So I think those were the two main questions, Erica, for when you meet with them.
So I think the next UA meeting should be the 29th, actually. It's the 29th. It's not next week. I misspoke. But I can bring that up to them on the 29th. Awesome. Michael?
I've done some checking here. I didn't check with the Care Buildings leadership, though. But in many, many places on campus, there's free menstrual products already. I don't know if any of the females on here on campus know that, because, of course, I didn't go into the rooms to check. But in some of the gender neutral rooms, I know that there's free products here. So I don't know how far that extends.
Thank you, Michael. Eric?
Hey, Kyle, this is Eric. I'm going through, I'm getting the audio ready to post from that first meeting anyway, September 4th. But before I get to that, if you just send me a quick email reminder, I'll go and look at the recording and pull out that relevant section. So if you want details and know exactly where everything sits, you know, before I get a chance to post that, I can get that to you.
Amazing.
Awesome. Does anybody else have any? Oh, Yvonne?
Yes, just wanted to thank you, Mike, also for making that observation that some areas, particularly bathrooms, already have menstrual products. So from my understanding, and I think this is something that Jessica had shared before, it was a student assembly, I believe, initiative that had some sort of funding But that has ran out, right? So the menstrual products that are out there, it's kind of like the remnants of what is available. And once they run out, we're done, I guess, placing them or refilling those areas. There are some colleges that apparently are taking their initiative on their own. But the question remains, right? Like, what are we doing as a whole institution based on this new law?
Do we have any other discussion regarding the free menstrual products in the bathrooms that we should take to EA for folks outside of what has already been said? No. Okay. All right. So the first gen conference that's being hosted by the Center for First Gen Students and Low Income Student Support is being hosted November 9th for undergraduate students. However, they are looking for presenters. So if there is anyone who is interested in presenting on a topic that ranges from navigating college to navigating life outside college, because this conference is going to be geared to freshmen through senior students who are first generation low income students, then we would welcome you to fill out that proposal. The link is in the email that I sent to you all earlier today on how to submit that proposal, but also there's an attachment to that email that talks about how to support beyond being a presenter, right? Thanks, Yalverton. Thank you for submitting a proposal. And so if you aren't able to participate in the capacity of a presenter, there are other ways that they're asking for you to lend your support. That could either be just by sharing it to students that you come in contact with who may be first gen or low income students, or even sharing to your networks who may be interested in being presenters for this. There's also a sponsorship component. So if you're area would be interested in donating to the cause. They have ways for your department to do that as well, or you as an individual if you would like to. So please let me know if you need any additional information with regard to this conference, and I'll be able to send that out to you. Melissa?
I was just wondering, is there going to be postering around buildings for students to see that this conference is up and coming?
I'm not sure about whether there will be postering about it, like physical postering. There may be some like scroll board things on TVs that are in heavily populated areas with students, specifically undergraduate students. But if you have any graduate students who would also like to be presenters, this could be an awesome opportunity for them to present as well. But as far as the postering, I'm not sure.
I just know we have like Green Dragon where we have a lot of students coming, and it would be great to like have something so that like we could put it up so that there was like, I'm more than happy to send it out to the students that this is available opportunity, but I think it would be great to like reach a larger number of like in certain areas where we know they're populating so they know about this event.
Absolutely. So I can reach out to the planning committee and see if they can provide any posterage. Anne?
Thanks. It sounds like a great conference. I wasn't entirely clear from the email. What's the primary audience for the attendees? Is it going to be Cornell only, or is it going to go beyond that? In my work, we work with a lot of pre-college students interested who are first gen wanting to come to Cornell. So I was just wanting to get some clarification. Thank you.
Sure. So it's only for Cornell undergrads, and we're looking to include graduate students in the capacity of presenters or volunteers if they would like. Any other questions pertaining to the conference, Kyle?
How long will the presentations be? And I imagine this is in person only.
Yes, it's in person only. And so the presentations would be 50 minutes with a 10 minute transitional period for students to get to their next presentation and for presenters to also set up if they need a different location.
Was that 50 or 15? Sorry.
Oh, sorry, 50.
Okay, that's what I thought you said, but you always got to check.
Absolutely, no problem.
I'll send us some people in my network that are on campus.
Thank you, Kyle. All right. Does anybody else have any open discussion items? No. Okay. Well, this is a pretty short meeting. thank you all for attending. We will end our employee. Oh, wait a minute. One more.
Kyle, if there's time. I just wanted to throw this out there in the scope of some other work that I'm doing. I was recently approached by the Better Food Foundation, which also has a partnership with an org called Default Veg. I don't know if folks are familiar with like choice architecture, but there's a lot of research that's actually come out of Cornell about this. So basically, like if you're at a restaurant and the menu has meat items at the very top, like people are really likely to choose those meat options. But if you put vegetarian options at the top, they're much more likely to choose vegetarian options, even if they are meat eaters and even if meat options are still available. So anyway, that's kind of the scope of what they do. They're a nonprofit that's kind of advocating for choice architecture. And I just wanted to raise this with y'all that they said there's two student ambassadors that are on campus that are actually working with Cornell Dining to test different choice architectures. They recently eliminated the upcharge for plant-based milks from both the default choice option, but also from an equity standpoint for those who might be lactose intolerant, for example. So just letting folks know that that's something that's happening. I was working on a resolution with GPSA to try and change some of the defaults that catering offers as far as like recyclable or single use or reusable like utensils and things like that. I don't think that ever like fully got off the ground. So it's something that I'm interested in revisiting and potentially including this in the conversation as well. So super early stages. We just had this conversation earlier in the week, but just wanted to let y'all know that that work is happening. And again, they're already working with Cornell Dining. I think they're just doing it a little bit under the radar. So I'll let you know if there's any other updates that I encounter.
Awesome. Thank you, Kyle. Hey, hey.
Hi, everyone. The last time we met, the last employee assembly meeting was September 18th. On September 18th, there was a career fair. There was a protest. There was a disruption, as was indicated in some correspondences to the broader Cornell community. I wanted to ask you all what you all thought about that. What have people been hearing? Are there any reflections on this that people think should be sort of ruminated over? Is there anything the employee assembly should do? Where do you think you all lie? And I apologize for bringing this up. You know, it would be nice to return this time to you, but I want to make the most of it by asking you all what you think about what's been happening on campus. I've been trying to have a lot of conversations with people on campus, going to campus, and just trying to do just a pulse check on everything. So how is everybody feeling about the student career fair and the protests and all of that activity on campus?
Jeremy, is your response to hey hey, or is it something new? Okay, Jeremy.
So I just wanted to kind of voice my thoughts, which are a bit conflicted, honestly. I, on one hand, during our last meeting, when we talked to President Kotlikoff, was grateful for the clarity that he provided in rules and consequences for protesting on campus. Yet at the same time, over recent weeks, particularly since that protest, some of the repercussions suffered by our students seem inequitable. They seem to be applied in an unequal fashion. So I'm thinking particularly of a lot of the news coverage of PhD student Mamoudou Tal, who is currently at risk of being deported because of his attendance at that protest. And the, as far as we know, as far as I know, anything that I've been able to find, he is the only student who has been held that responsible. And the reason for that is again, this is my understanding of the situation, which may not be entirely correct. He was recognized at that protest by the chief of police because he is very active in pro-Palestinian protest. So the fact that his face is recognizable, which means he is then targeted as part of this, and in addition to an actual targeted campaign against the student, makes me really uncomfortable with that level of response to this individual student, which seems disproportionate to the response of other attendees of that protest.
Michael?
So I have I appreciate the university gives them an opportunity to have a voice, but I personally I'm tired of them. I have no use for them breaking into a career fair. It's not good for our police. I applaud the police for their restraint. The administration has kept us out of the news for the most part. They don't assault anybody. And part of so these our students spend a lot of money to come to this university, and we've got a lot of very intelligent students, and so those employers are those kids are interested in those employers. So and part of the separation that I have is my son is a Navy helicopter pilot. He went to Norwich University, physics major. But he relies on the products that those people produce to protect his life. And he also responds to our commander in chief. So when he is told to go on a mission, he goes on a mission and doesn't question it. So I have a very different perspective from people, and I appreciate that they're the horrible news that comes out of those war zones. War is not pretty. It just isn't okay, and I'm not interested in debating that fact. But these kids can protest, but the I'm a town board member up in Ulysses, and one of the things that is very near and dear to my heart, been here for 35 years, it takes a lot of people to build a university like this. And if you want to protest, protest. But don't burn down my town. And that's where I come from. So they haven't burned down the campus, but they spray paint, they damage these facilities. I work for facilities. I know what it takes to put these things together. I've helped build several buildings on campus. Don't damage my buildings. And we are all Cornelians, so they're my buildings, they're your buildings. So that's where I stand on it.
Brian?
I will confess to having not followed this too closely myself. So I'm mostly reporting on some comments some of my colleagues in the library have said to me. And I offer this in response to Jeremy's comment about an unequal distribution of punishment, because it does seem really noteworthy that the person they're really punishing is a Black Muslim. And that's really.
I'm not even on mute. I wanted to echo Jeremy's sentiments that it doesn't sit well that one student is, being singled out, because surely they could if they want to, it just seems like making an example of one student for whom the consequences are more dire than they would be for many of those who were attending. So, yeah, I I think it comes across as unjust.
Ocean?
Hi, everyone. I am not in the EA. I'm the GPSA liaison or the graduate professional student assembly. So just coming in here, just like, you know, be that liaison and everything and stuff. GPSA in general doesn't have like a official statement and stuff regarding the situation, but I do want to give my general thoughts for this. I think that especially with this overall situation, that the idea of students being able to practice their right to protest in of itself, that's a very important right that every person has, regardless of like where they're from, regardless of all the things that's there and stuff. It's also really important to understand the context of the overall ways in which the pro-Palestinian students are protesting. Sure, they are being a bit rowdy. They are being right in front of your face and everything. Just letting people know like this is what they stand for and that what they're fighting against is the injustice and everything and stuff. But I do want to agree with the sentiment that Jeremy and many others have mentioned, that singling out this one person is frankly wrong and unfair overall, because there's a lot of graduate students and there's a lot of undergraduate students, but the one person out of the 150 or so that were in the encampments and in the tents last semester that were also protesting in the career fair and much more, this is the one person that was singled out. And on top of that, that being an international student, such a huge severity of an issue and stuff. I can agree to some extent that the administration has worked hard to like keep Cornell's name off the radar from like national news and everything and stuff. But I would have to then also argue that it's because of the actions that they are doing on this one student alone that they are getting nationwide international recognition of like the things that are happening. Bernie Sanders made a huge statement not too long ago saying that Cornell is doing something completely wrong. There's articles from the Rolling Stones, The Nation, from Cornell Daily Sun, from many other places as well. And we're getting, and as much as like the administration is trying to like, you know, make sure that Cornell is not getting too much heat by doing this action, and also on top of that, by also refusing to accept the appeal for such a decision, I think that just exacerbates the situation overall. It's one thing if it's like a group of students and if it's like one of like the least harshest like disciplinary action stuff, but there's not a clear procedure on like how things went, at least from what I'm understanding from the Cornell Daily Sun, from what I've seen from Mamadou's Twitter and much more. It was just from there to a huge extreme of just basically suspending him, which then threatens a deportation because he's an international student. There should have been due process, and from what Mamadou and the other organization saying, there isn't such, and the university has not commented on that, so we don't really know if they have tried to do process kind of thing and stuff, so we're kind of rolling with them saying that there wasn't much of a thing and stuff. My voting members are currently working on a resolution right now to produce like GPA's official statement on this. This is just my general thoughts about the whole situation. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, Ocean. Pia?
Hey, so there was a communication that came yesterday from the president that explained the process that they took, and it didn't sound like this was a random thing. Like, they mentioned that they do have a lot of video on this and that this student attacked the police, so there was a committee there that decided on the sanctions that they were gonna take on each of the students, and this student got the highest sanction based on what they know he did, and that's recorded. So I don't know if everybody got this communication, but yeah, when I read that, it didn't seem unfair. It's unfortunate, but it seems that there was cause. That's all.
Thanks, Pia. Melissa?
So Again, thank you, Pia, because that's where I was. I haven't followed, admittedly, like every piece of information that's coming out about this, but I was trying to figure out where we were finding out one student was segregated, just because I read the letter from President Kotlikoff yesterday, and it sounded like there was no singular segregation in that email from him. I have it open now, and it's saying multiple students on camera, and that there was a process that had to be gone through. So I guess I'm just curious, and if someone can point to like where one singular student is being segregated by the university, I would like appreciate kind of seeing that information, because that's not what's coming to me that I'm seeing at the university level.
Carl?
Yeah, so I'm thinking about how to approach this, because I also have a somewhat biased opinion because I am on the president's committee, and we are actively talking about this case as well as other cases and this situation. And it gets really hard, especially with FERPA rules about evidence, exposing any of this. And it gets really hard when communication can feel oriented towards the university telling the story versus the student telling the story. So I deeply sympathize with those who feel like the administration has been particularly targeting a student. And I also can see things on the other side of the university acted based on their current policy, which is when things get violent or disrespectful to the building, that they do have to take action, not only to keep people safe, but there's also something called a Title VI action that says that any bias, threatening or violence that happens has to be taken action has to be taken swiftly. We have to show that we have due cause to stopping this from happening again. So there is legal ramifications as well as you know, making sure that people's safety is also there. That being said, personally, I do have feelings about this, and I do feel like there is a harshness in someone being asked to leave not only the university, but as a result, leaving the country as well. So I'm torn, and I can tell you that the committee is working on it, and you will see our proposal pretty soon. I think within a few weeks here of what we're suggesting to the president, but and I won't speak on more of the content, but we are presenting some information both to you to get your feedback, and I really suggest that you read it thoroughly and give us appropriate feedback.
Yvonne?
Yes, thank you. One of the things that makes me think a lot is why was there police present, right? Like the email suggests that there was some type of physical contact between the students and the police, particularly from the students to the police, right? That they kind of pushed their way into the career fair or what have you. And again, my question is just like, why was the police there, right? Like my speculation is that they were protecting the career fair because it was known to the public that there was going to be weapons manufacturers present at the career fair. And so the students decided to protest, right? And at that particular moment, again, my thought just comes to like, who are the police protecting then, if not the students who are expressing their freedom of speech? And to that extent too, thinking about the impact that the police has had on communities of color, that speaking from my own experience, is not necessarily very positive. How is having the police in these spaces helpful in this particular conversation? And if it was something that was known by the university, from my perspective, again, just kind of having similar knowledge as you all, that the weapons manufacturers were going to be present, then should they have modify the modality of the career fair for those individuals to avoid something like this? Again, I don't have the answers, just things that make me think, particularly again with the police presence, as that's not something that makes me feel safe. And I wonder too how that impacts particularly students who have other underrepresented identities and potentially some negative experience already with the police here and elsewhere.
I just wanted to make a reminder that anything said in chat is not on the official record. So if you would like to contribute to the conversation, please do so by raising your hand and being called on.
Yvonne, were you done?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Kyle?
Yeah, just wanted to flag as a remote employee when the first note came through from the president. I think this is kind of echoing what Carl was saying. That was the first that I'd heard of it. I had no idea what had happened. I have no visual of what went down or like no feeling or sentiment of how the campus is feeling after the event. So the only communication was the official communication from the president's office. And I'm sure that's something that's felt by a lot of other remote employees. I think it can be easy for remote employees to not be aware of what's happening on campus, and just to like see these letters come through, these emails come through. And it was a really long one. I read it because I care, but I'm sure a lot of remote employees are just like deleting them or moving them to folders to maybe review later. So I think just from a, like, I don't know, equitable communication standpoint, the folks that are not on campus aren't really sure what's going on. And it's hard for folks in my position to like have a side. I know where I stand fundamentally on issues like this, but I think it's really difficult for us to be part of this conversation. So Carl, to your point about where communication is coming from, I think it would be really good to have like more formal channels for students to also share their voices so that we're not reading about it in Rolling Stone and seeing what could be, you know, a totally misconstrued media perspective of what happened. It's still not even really the student's perspective of what was happening there. So I, again, don't really have a solution right now, but I think that's something I would love to see is like when these messages come through, I have to say the message from the president seemed really defensive and I knew it wasn't necessarily a fully reflective story of what happened, but I don't know where to go to get that full story.
Thank you, Kyle. Jeremy, and in the interest of time, we're going to try to get to Marcy and Bethany, but if we reach our limit, we won't be able to recognize you too, okay?
And thank you, Hey, for bringing up a topic that clearly needed to be talked about and extending our very short meeting. But Carl, thanks for the nuance there and the reason, some of the reasoning, inside reasoning behind the messaging, because it's clear that the articles that are present now are from the perspective of the student impacted, which is going to be clearly one part of the story, and the limitations on the university for sharing their messaging does make that a difficult situation to get the full picture. I do tend to agree with Yvonne, though, as well. The discussions around what are we protecting and who are we protecting. To answer, though, the question about police presence at this event, one of the things that I do is manage the event scheduling system. I know that there is a rule in place that requires events over a certain number of people to have a police presence. That's just a built-in rule as part of the scheduling an event. Should that rule exist? That's open for debate, but that isn't something you specifically choose because you expect a response, a protest or something at a particular event. It just is part of the requirements for holding that event. That's all.
Thank you, Jeremy. Bethany?
Hey, everyone. Let me see if my video will let me not freeze. One sec. Okay. Anyway. Oh, there we go. So I just wanted to, first of all, thank you, Hey, for bringing this up. Obviously, we all have a lot of opinions. I think what I was most struck by, among many other things people have shared, was that the tone of Kotlikoff's email seemed like it could have been
done a lot more thoughtfully and without the sort of defensive, antagonistic approach. And I know that I'm sure that sense of being deeply upset and concerned and wanting to express that is very real and true and probably justified in a lot of ways, but it's very hard to read an email from our interim leader that seems to prioritize shaming people for using their voice. That really was what came across to me the most, a sort of emphasis on shame and blame, and pairing that alongside the text that said, we are working to create a culture of free speech. It just is hard to equate those two. And I wish this in the past, that there were more consideration being given to how a leader could transform this into a growth opportunity, to use leadership speak, rather than a shame opportunity.
Thank you, Bethany. So in the interest of respecting folks, time is 12:56. Do we have any lasting, like short remarks before we go? No? Well, thank you all for attending our meeting today. I will adjourn our meeting at 12:56 p.m.
Have a great day. I'll second the motion to adjourn.
Oh, sorry.
Take care, everyone. Good seeing you.
Thank you, Carl.
Yep, no problem.